on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guests today are Landa Ritchie, 92 years old, almost 93. Originally from Bartlesville, Oklahoma, he's been in the same home in the Tarpe area, right on the border between Fresno and Clovis, for over 60 years. He wouldn't be there without surviving some seriously scary situations during World War II with the 87th Infantry Division. When we left off, he had mentioned fighting two enemies in the Battle of the Bulge, the Germans, of course, and the extreme frigid weather. I'm curious what helped you get through to the next day when you're in that freezing foxhole and it's cold and wet and you can't feel your feet or you're in pain, you're scared about what's going to happen the next day. How did you find a way to sleep? What was it that you think helped you survive and endure?
I think my trust in God helped me more than anything else. I've got closer to God at that time than I've ever been in my life. It seemed like I just asking for Him to save me and bring me home, and I guess prayers do get answered. So I felt that that's what happened to me. I never felt desolate. I never stopped asking God to save me. And I had a lot of training. I fell back on a lot of that, you know.
A lot of veterans have told me if they were married at the time or engaged, they would take a photo of their bride or their fiance. Did you have a photo of your wife and son with you all the time?
I didn't have it all the time. It's always in my duffel bag or barracks bag, they call them in. When I went in the hospital with frozen feet, I got my duffel bag and my stuff. I had a musette bag, and I had quite a few souvenirs in there that I wanted to get home, and they said, "You'll get it back." Well, I knew I wasn't going to get that bag back with them souvenirs, P-51s and cameras. Film hadn't been developed, and he picked that up off your dead soldiers, you know, the Germans. I never was really mad at the enemy. I never was really mad at them. I knew that they was just doing what I was doing. They was trying to kill us, and we was trying to kill them. So I never really got mad at them. That's a strange thing. Most people wouldn't believe that, but I never really got angry at them. I just tried to do my best to serve my country and to stay alive.
Well, and I know there's a lot of people that are glad you did. You talk about not being mad at the enemy, and I guess I have to say, even when they fired those infamous 88s at you, do you remember the first time you encountered that German artillery?
They introduced us to about 5 minutes worth of 88s when we first went into bivouac on the front line, and it was terrible. You know, you didn't know where to go, and they'd fall in among you. We had some casualties. You didn't know whether to move or whether to stay still or what, because if you moved, the next round might fall right where you're going to move, you know. So I just stayed still. Shrapnel went all over me, but didn't none of it penetrate. I knew then God was with me. It scares you. It shakes you up. The morale goes rock bottom, you know. Our first casualty was a company commander. Always had a person with him. They was up in front observing the enemy line, and he turned around, and someone had caught Gruder right in the head, you know, and just busted him all up. And he put his hand in that, and he went berserk. We had to take him out of the line on more or less like and tied him up, took him off the line. I never heard from him again. And he is a West Pointer.
That kind of backs up the statement so many veterans have shared with me, that nothing, as much as you prepared before you went over, nothing can really prepare you for what you're going to deal with.
Can't compare yourself with that. Our ammunition carrier was laying back down. If you want to get him up to get him moving, thought he was just scared, you know. I went up and kicked him in the butt, and he turned him over, and he is dead in a bone. So that sort of shook me up, you know. But after a while, you get sort of used to it, There's nothing in the book that will tell you about dead people or people getting killed. So I don't like to even think about things like that.
I don't blame you. And it wasn't just the people that you saw devastated. Here, some of the places where you fought, cities like Metz and Koblenz, these great historic cities where so much had been built over the years, so much that the people could have been proud of, and you saw them pretty much destroyed, huh?
Yeah, it was destroyed. Koblenz, that's what you're talking about. 87th Division captured that town and held it, and that was costly, very costly, in troops' lives. But we held in there and got it. Some of the German people, they helped us, showed us where to go, you know, and this and that. It was all them people over there wasn't Hitlerized. There's some of them real good people.
Koblenz is actually the city where my great-grandmother came from. So you're saying that the German civilians there in that city, as you're fighting the German army, the Wehrmacht, for this city, the German civilians were helping you, giving you pointers and telling you how you could defeat the enemy.
Right, there was. There's very good people in that town. There's a lot of fanatics, but there's a lot of real good people. My grandmother was born in Germany, incidentally. She raised 7 kids, and none of her children knew that she could speak German. And when we came along, well, she was a tired old woman. She'd get mad at us, me and my sister. She'd get mad at us, and she'd spit that German out at us, you know. And I'd tell her own children that, and they wouldn't believe that. I said, don't matter to me.
Well, the question is, did you remember any of it? Did it come in handy when you were interacting with German-speaking people?
Some of it did, and most of it just went over my head, you know. I was uneducated, and most of it just slipped by. But I learned a few words when I got over there.
You talked about Koblenz, the huge cost there, the price in human life. And I guess I have to ask, how close did you come to being part of that? I imagine that you were pretty close to some of that heavy action. Do you remember some moments where it was almost your number that was called?
Yeah, I remember two times that see people right beside you get it, you know, and they say, man, the next one's mine. So you just kind of go out of your mind, you know. Well, if it is, it is, you know. So life was so damn miserable over there, excuse my language, but you get so miserable sometimes you just really don't care. Night's not going to be no relief to you. Just another wet foxhole.
Well, and maybe that's important to note, too, for people who aren't familiar with how brutal the weather was during the Battle of the Bulge specifically. How did you stay warm? What did you have? Did you have anything on you that could help you stay warm through the night, or were you pretty much perpetually frozen?
No, we had a heavy overcoat. It got about a half wet. There was some warmth in it. Some warmth in it, even though it was sort of damp, you know, there's some warmth in it. That was about the only thing we had. And it covered your whole body. You kind of snuggle down in it. And you come your time to stay awake, well, it's hard to stay awake. It gets so cold, you'd chatter and shake till you warmed up, and then you'd doze off, and then you'd get cold again and start chattering again, you know, shaking all over, and then you'd warm up a little bit. But that's the way a lot of us kept you from freezing to death.
Well, and I know we've got a lot more ground to cover, but you mentioned earlier the frozen feet. For some reason, I have a feeling that that's something that you've had to carry with you for 70 years here. I mean, that's not something you left over there in Europe. Is it something that still bothers you? Are there some effects of that that are still with you?
It still bothers my feet. Sometimes they hurt. Sometimes they feel all right. When I get tired, my feet hurt too, you know. And I don't know if that's the cause of frozen, but I kind of believed it was, because they didn't do that before. Yeah, they still bother me.
You mentioned how there were times you'd see someone hit next to you and you thought, the next one's mine. And then that happened. You were hit with some shrapnel. You were wounded. You ended up being listed as missing in action. How did all that unfold?
I was on a patrol. We run into a big patrol from Germany, and they was just outdoing us, so we just split up. Everyone was on their own. Me and one other guy made it back. I always felt guilty that the guys that maybe I could have done something to help them to get back too, you know, but situation like that, while you're thinking about number one.
How many guys were on this patrol?
There was 8 of us.
And when the Germans outnumbered you, you split up so you wouldn't just be executed by them.
Yeah, we split up and went different directions. And later on, we tried to regroup. Me and another guy tried to regroup, and we found a lot of them, others was dead, you know. It's just a terrible feeling.
I want to make sure I get the whole story on this. You alluded to this earlier, and you said the reason this happened was because you volunteered for a task. This was something they were looking for volunteers to go out on this patrol and figure out where the Germans were, or what?
Yeah, they send you out on reconnaissance patrol for going in on the edge of a group of Germans' campsite. You can go there and figure out the morale, how they're eating. And just listen to them, you know. There's always one or two German-speaking people that will understand. Then you take that back to the S2, and he'll put it all together and figure out what's up ahead, what the morale is of the German people, you know, as one to two went up and picked up the information. Sometimes you can pick up a prisoner or two, you know.
So this wasn't the only time you did something like this?
After I couldn't hear from my wife, I didn't care. I'd volunteer for everything. I went on a lot of patrols.
It almost sounds like you were trying to get yourself killed.
Yeah, I didn't have no will to live. There's another little incident tied to that 9 months of no letters. I got to Camp Carson, Colorado, rehabilitating there, and I got the whole big box of mail. I found out my wife had wrote me every day, and I went to go into them, and I told her to be sure and send a safety razor blade. in each letter, you know. So we needed to shave, you know. And Patton, he's hell on, you staying clean, you know. So I had all them razor blades. Most some of them had rusted because that mail had been following me around, but we were just moving too damn fast, or I was, and some of the others was getting mail. But some coincidence, I just didn't get mail. I got it all at Camp Carson, Colorado.
And she got some mail that said you were missing in action, so that had to be tough for her. But how long was it after you went out on that patrol in the middle of the night, got separated from the rest of the guys, and had to just try to survive? How long did you spend away from your company?
Stayed away about 16 weeks, and all getting back, I finally could run into a friendly company, and I soldiered with them a little while, about all 2 weeks.
But that was not an easy journey. Tell me about it. Where was this, where you had to split off and fend for your own?
Well, it's somewhere there in eastern Germany. I don't know the names of the towns or anything, but it's in eastern Germany, and we was being hit pretty hard, and they wanted to get information about the troops, whether it's SS troops or whether it's just put together troops or there's new troops or what. So that's how I come on that patrol to find out, and just got up there and run into a big patrol coming after us, you know.
And is this where you were wounded?
No, I picked up some shrapnel from my bullet wounds, but I didn't. My legs was, I had nicks in my legs and my arm.
So you are all alone, and you don't know where the Americans are, where the Germans are, who can help you, who won't. How did you find that help? How did you get out of that situation 16 weeks later?
Roamed around in the woods there and tried to stay hid in the daytime, and pretty soon my wife run across the French underground, and they spoke a little English, and they said, "We're here to help you." And I didn't know. I was very suspicious of that, you know, but pretty soon, well, they gained my confidence and gave me something to eat. I eat everything always by myself.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. I mean, when you're on your own in the woods, no one's serving you breakfast.
Well, I eat a lot of berries, of frozen berries, and anything looked like it would be good to eat, I tried it. I was really getting pretty hungry at the time. I think it was about 4 days after I was by myself till this underground person found me. And we talked a little bit, and he had some canned food on him. So we had a little meal of that, and after that, well, they took care of me.
Well, and how'd they get you out of there? How'd they get you back to American control?
We moved by night and hide in the daytime. We was in a very thick concentration of German troops in there. They'd take me out and hide me in the daytime. They'd hide me in cellars. They'd cover me with old blankets and Lord knows whatever. And then at night, well, we'd move out. And I got pretty ragged after a little while, but I eat all kind of German food. I eat all kind of French food, and actually it's pretty good food, but I was hungry, and everything tasted good. That brings up another story. There's one night we moved three times that night, and was in a kind of a cellar-like thing, if you will, a kind of a basement type, and they had a little hut down in there that they could hide and cover with blankets. So the Germans got wise of that. And they sent four people down there to investigate that thing from future actions, you know, of it. So they come down there, and I'm in this hut, you know.
And we're going to leave you in there for a minute because it's break time again. 92-year-old Arlanda Ritchie, our guest today. We'll find out how that tense situation unfolded when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. The average age of the veterans on this program is pretty close to 90, so I've seen firsthand over the years the challenges of aging, and I've realized that everybody approaches them a little differently. For some, a friendly senior living community is the ideal option, but for many of us, there's no place like home. I don't have any ruby slippers for you, but I do have an idea. Call Jason Selsler at 317 Construction, recognized by the National Association of Home Builders as a certified age-in-place specialist. Instead of giving up the comforts of home, why not let 317 Construction make your home more comfortable by making it more accessible? Jason and his crew can widen doorways, install ramps for wheelchairs or scooters, reconfigure your counters for better access, modify your shower for safety, secure grab bars wherever you need them, whatever it takes to allow you and your family to keep making your memories in the place that holds so many of them, your home sweet home. Call 905-8490. That's 559-905-8490.